Hey guys, before we begin, we just wanted to do a quick shout out to all those who entered into our giveaway this past weekend. We are so grateful for everything you guys did for sharing the word about our podcast. And now we are going to go ahead and I have all of the entries right here on my spreadsheet. And randomizing. Oh! Is Audrey on Instagram. She is AwBunnyBaby. Audrey, thank you so much for being a part of our giveaway. Congratulations. I will reach out to you today to get all your contact information so we can get that sent out to you.
And everyone else, if you didn't get an opportunity to win or participate in this giveaway, be on the lookout for there are surely more to come. And your reviews may come into play. So go ahead and keep submitting those reviews. Or if you've already submitted one, just know that it may be useful in the future.
And I guess just a secret sneak peek into what's hatching. Maybe there's going to be some Mythos dragon-related material in this next giveaway.
Go check us out at World Talkers on Instagram, and now on to the episode. Welcome, adventurers, both young and old. If you're looking to find a place where immortal witches, portal-jumping scientists, and adorable baby knights collide, then you're in the right place. A magical adventure unlike any you have experienced before, as World Talkers, an unofficial Evermore fancast, is about to begin. Hey everyone, welcome to World Talkers, an unofficial Evermore fancast. I'm Chandler, and I am joined by my three best friends.
What's up, I'm Skylar, guys.
I'm Daniel, hello, hello.
You know, it's your boy, Wyatt.
We are so excited to be here today with this episode. We just want to reach out and say thank you so much for listening to us. In particular, Tana, thank you for binge listening. Courtney, and some of the Evermore staff for showing support and appreciation for World Talkers. We really are glad to have you listening, and we're glad to bring it to you. So thank you. Just wanted to mention here, we have some exciting news.
Pray tell, what is this exciting news?
Well, we have a World Talkers Mythos teaser. An exclusive teaser just for our listeners.
You don't say.
It'll be at the end of this episode.
Why can't you tell me now?
No, you have to wait.
Okay, I'll be patient like a good little boy.
Thank you. And we got that exclusive teaser that you will hear at the end of this episode when we joined Evermore at the Unicorn Festival up at the Traverse Mountain Outlets.
It was rather a fun experience. It was great to see all of the unicorns. And it was actually a lot busier than I expected it to be.
I was pretty excited just by all of the excitement that was there going on. Like there was a buzz in the air, and it was also super fun just at the Evermore booth, in my opinion, because yeah, there were unicorns, but Evermore had a dragon, which personally for me is a little bit cooler than a unicorn.
Also, it was Evermore off season. Like
yeah,
Evermore is closed right now, and we were able to interact with some of the characters that we love and know, mm-hmm. and that was wonderful.
But what if I didn't go to Unicorn Festival? How can I see these wonderful things?
Oh, well, you can check out pictures on our Instagram, mm-hmm. at World Talkers.
Yeah, we dedicated a huge story and a couple of posts, but we're hoping to release some more to you.
I went on a quest for a cup.
It was pretty good.
We all did. I turned in the cup for the quest.
I got the cup.
I turned it in because I somehow was able to requisition it from Chandler. It was fantastic.
You say requisition, I say stealing. That's okay, though.
I acquired it.
Some goblin talk going on. Requisition. Steal.
I've always felt like a bit of a goblin.
Well, he put it down on the ground. It must mean it's not his anymore.
Well, guys, thank you again for coming today. We are going to be talking about Aurora, the Aurora season review. Just as a side note, we, as we move into the review, a reminder that Evermore is evolving and changing. And this review is based on our personal experiences and opinions. We did not experience everything, and we undoubtedly missed some things. So please listen to our opinions with a grain of salt. And if you have any opinions, please feel free to share.
If while listening to last episode, you felt like, whoa, I feel like things are kind of all over the place with what these guys are saying, I guess what we want you to be aware of is the disjointment you may have felt from that last episode was largely because our experience felt a little disjointed during the Aurora season. And that's going to be a bit of some of the feedback and criticism that we get into during this episode. So we'll flesh that out. We'll give you our reasoning for it. But we also want to point out all of the good things as well that we saw throughout the entire Aurora season that was able to bring a special something to the Christmas season, the holiday season, for us and for lots of families that were able to make it.
Definitely. So today we're going to review Aurora, like I said, and we are going to split it up a little bit differently than how we've done reviews before. So guys, join me in talking about the main quests or the main story of Aurora. What'd you guys think?
To start off, I'd really like to say that the tableaus this time around became much, much easier to track. It was almost ubiquitously known amongst the characters and the people there when these tableaus were going to take place and where. That made it a better experience in regards to trying to find these more main quest kind of progressors.
And that was evident to me when I was in the park. There was a couple of characters, there was a couple of actual Evermore Park staff that came up to me and like, hey, you want to be in the burrows by 9:30. I hear something special is going on. As a consumer of the park, as a visitor, it was really nice to be like, I know where things are happening and I'm not left out of the loop or anything like that. So that was really well done. I loved that. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
It allowed me to not be like anxiously thinking that if I go over here, I may be missing something in town square, so that I know how much time I have before I gotta book it back over there to see what's going down.
Yeah. Sure. Definitely took care of that FOMO, the fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm.
Took care of that we could either split the party if we needed to, or just go along our way if it wasn't something that we necessarily wanted to check out.
Absolutely. I would say with that, there were some tableaus that felt like they were scheduled very closely together. So we did rush from one point to the other. One time, I did run with Nisno as she was running to the front of the park to go to another tableau shortly after something that she was just doing. So there was some rapidity to it, but it felt natural in terms of, oh, the story is progressing, let's go see from one point to the next.
Speaking of story, I personally really liked the political foundation that was a part of this season. I liked instead of factions, we had nations. And it felt larger. The world felt larger to me. And I really, really appreciated that.
And along with that, having these nations and having those kind of contentious groups, not only, as you were saying, why it was these nations, but there was also factions within nations and opposed or within those separate entities. So it did create a lot more complexity and a lot more realism in that regard. The characters tended to feel a bit more real.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we did notice, though, that we've talked about a little bit off the podcast that we want to make sure that it's brought up here, is that we felt like things didn't really kick off in terms of story and the main quest development until like the New Year's party shortly after Christmas, almost as though Aurora was just enjoying the first few weeks of December leading up to the big holiday season, and then they allowed themselves to get into story after that.
Which I totally get. I mean,
totally.
Aurora was supposed to be this magical winter wonderland surrounding Christmas.
Or, totally, or very, very Dickensian.
Right. Unfortunately, though, it left us, as we went week after week, it left us wanting more because there wasn't a storyline in place until after that.
Please, sir, could I have some more? That's how we felt.
Could I have some more story,
please? Can I have some Aurora, please? We're funny.
Yeah, and even when talking about the tableaus, something that I found was, and I think we've mentioned this before, Evermore was originally going to be a walkthrough where you would have a guided tour of this town, and you would be able to see and meet one-on-one with a character. The way it is now with these tableaus, because of the design of the park, sometimes, most of the time, we couldn't hear what was going on because there were so many people around mm-hmm. because they knew about the tableaus, mm-hmm. right? Which was an excellent, great thing. Everyone was aware, but that put me back behind, you know, 10 people or whatever, and I could not hear for the life of me what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this was a similar problem that we mentioned during our lore review, is that it's just kind of difficult to hear some of the tableaus. And well, yes, as you were saying, Chandler, the tableaus were easy to get to and find. That kind of just amplified the problem. It made it much more difficult to hear if you just weren't there early. The only tableaus that I really got to hear this time around were the ones where I had gone about 15 to 20 minutes early and kind of posted up there so I could be in a good spot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we saw that Evermore Park knew about a problem. They did something to fix it. And now this is just a consequence of everyone knowing about it. And it just may need to be reworked. And that's all.
Yeah, I really want to hear all the dirty laundry that's being thrown out into the public.
Oh,
I want
please.
To know the drama. Give it to me.
Which really facilitates with me as the World Walker being there in the story. I can imagine that. I'm the only one listening to this conversation. If only I don't know if it was the actors who possibly could have spoke up more, or simply technical, like having mics, which would be weird mm-hmm. as well. I don't really fully know what they would do.
The wizard casts thaumaturgy?
Thaumaturgy, yeah. Thaumaturgy. Something to boost that voice.
Right, can we just get some...
Yeah.
Shouting? No, please don't shout. But yeah, something needs to be done there, which I really... And that would help me understand and enjoy those tableaus even more.
Right. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of things that they could do. We know that they have a sound system in the park in terms of the speakers that they have throughout to play some of the music. I wonder if they scheduled the tableaus to be in a set location where they would have mics or something set up where it was easy to hear, easy to listen to.
Right.
Or even if the tableaus during the course of the evening were filmed and posted onto social media.
Which we have heard may have happened during lore. We would still love to see those, please.
The one in specific I want is the lore portal closing. I can't find it. I'm digging through social media and I can't find it. Please, please, if you have it, send it to me.
This personally appeals to me because I only went once to Aurora. I feel like I messed out on a lot of those tableaus, so mm-hmm. having an opportunity to go back and not only listen to it clearly, but listen to it just for the first time, mm-hmm. Would give me a lot of story and a lot of depth to just go into the park and use at my will.
And I can kind of understand why they don't do that necessarily in regards to social media, because that's the point. Like, they want you to go repeatedly. They want you to have a good time. And if the whole story's out there, you're not really going to feel motivated to go.
Right. Mm-hmm. Why would I pay the money to see this thing there live when I can just watch it on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely some thoughts there that maybe they need to reconsider. But, yeah.
Right. And I guess maybe a way to... I don't know. It's hard to give an idea to something when I already know that my suggestion's going to be something that is also going to have problems with it. There's no perfect solution right now. I'm excited to see where Evermore goes with it.
Definitely.
I just want to make sure that if I critique something, that I feel like I also offer up some suggestions as to, maybe this is something that could be done. I don't know.
Right.
Absolutely. We just want to see the park succeed, and that's why we want to give suggestions and why we do these reviews in general is to give, you know, kind of positive or positive feedback or criticisms in regard to how we're feeling and like how the changes, you know, affected our experiences there. And it's mm-hmm. not necessarily bad or good. It's just, you know, it's just the experience.
These are the facts
of
what we experienced.
Yeah.
And I think central to that in terms of story really was this idea that this is around Christmas, right? The park opened up in early December, I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but it definitely felt like we were waiting for Christmas to happen. And it felt that way as a guest learning about the story. it felt like the story was there, just we couldn't access it. We couldn't dig deep at all until after December and after Christmas.
One of the things that I kept getting in regards to that was just like, oh, Santa's coming. And anytime we would ask about things or even kind of specific things, it was, oh, well, the Aurorans are here. They're trying to kind of create relations. I'm like, okay, how? Why? What? Like, what are we doing to do this? And they're like, oh, well, they're waiting for a friend. You know, Santa's going to show up and stuff like that. And so it was a little less main story oriented, and they definitely had some side quests. But as far as trying to dig into that, there was a couple things. Basically, one of them was just, as we said in our last episode, is that, you know, Suds restored his relationship with Wickham, and they kind of talked out what happened and discussed what was going on there. And that was kind of one of really the only story moments that I remember that happened before Christmas.
Yeah, we got a lot of side quests.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the nature of how things were before Christmas leading up to things, where we felt like we couldn't necessarily access the deeper stuff, I would say that there was still just a slight air of that after Christmas as well, into January, towards the end of Aurora, where it felt like there were little things that were dropped in that could have been darker, a little more grittier. Puka showing up, speaking to Queen Lila about this dark cold that's coming from Aurora that might be a little more ominous than we thought. That never felt like it was really developed ever after that. When we tried to pull on those strings, they kind of led to nowhere. It was one of those instances where we felt like, oh man, Aurora could be so much better if we were able to pull on that, or if we were able to explore these avenues.
I mean, that right there is one of the reasons why I didn't go to Aurora as much as I kind of wanted to, because the idea was like, pre-Christmas, Aurora is a wonderful, magical place where people are building relations and having a good time. The story from what you guys were describing to me when you guys were coming home from Evermore and enjoying yourselves was, things are going to happen soon, probably after Christmas. And so for me, it was like, well, I'll just wait till after Christmas to get to that good, gritty, wonderful stuff that you were talking about just earlier, Dan.
Something to put your teeth in.
Something to sink into and be like, I want to explore the world. I want to know what's going on. And then when I finally went, it was kind of like, I've been told all of these things. I already know what's going on. And I didn't really feel like there was something to sink into. There was a little bit, but not a ton. I already had gotten all the information from you guys.
And that felt like the majority of the issue is, we talked about that before, someone mentioned it before, that there was like a really good foundation. These political intrigues and these standing points that these characters had, even within their own countries and nations and factions, they felt like they could be expounded upon and have more conflict and more trouble. And I don't know if I ever really got that. The only time I felt that there was tableaus that happened or expounded on that was the New Year's Eve. And there was a lot of tableaus, and they were really intense, which is when Puka, you know, addressed Queen Lila.
Yeah.
Drifa got mad at King Eirik for wanting to choose take Jakul as the general and commander. Puka talking to Reiner and Drifa. So everything I pinpoint back to where the story was like progressing and actually getting interesting, it only happened on that like one night and then the finale night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were super excited. If you remember at that New Year's Eve party, we were thinking, oh wow, Aurora is going to open up. We cracked the shell, that whatever, this barrier that we couldn't get through. Now, from the start of January until all the way until the end of the park, or the end of the season, we were going to be able to flesh out this whole world and actually get into some things. I'm okay with happy-go-lucky storylines, right? Mm-hmm. Not everything has to be lore dark or well, dark
absolutely,
in it.
Absolutely.
All we wanted was depth, which after that one night or on the finale, like you said, that's the only time we saw it. Skylar and I went every week during Aurora, and we couldn't get any more no matter how many times we tried to ask questions. It was like things were just still frozen up in terms of the characters talking about things.
It felt as if it was like hindered, as if it was there, but for some reason it just wasn't coming up.
Right.
And that was made manifest to me when I went to go talk to Drifa, Jakul, and then King Eirik. Because to me, it was like, oh, this problem can be easily solved by just talking to King Eirik and getting his opinion, and then boom, done. And to me, it was like, it shouldn't be that easy to solve. Maybe there could have been a plot where King Eirik wanted to cause war, right? That's why he's pitter-patting between Jaqul and Drifa, because he wants to start this mm-hmm. army, this fight. But there wasn't something like that to be explored.
Mm-hmm. And
or maybe there was, but it wasn't being given to us.
And in fact, we started creating our own fan theories and things like that because we felt like the characters weren't giving it to us. We started theorizing what we thought might be happening, and a lot of that was actually more interesting than what was actually going on,
yeah.
Which is not something we wanted to see at all.
Absolutely. For example, we had a cool conversation with Jaqul. We learned that the Aurorans have intrinsic connections to elements, and we learned that King Eirik's connection to an element was wind, was the air. And one of the reasons Jaqul was hesitant to serve King Eirik again was because, like the wind, you never know which way it's going to blow. He wants good relations now, but in a few weeks, what is he going to want? After New Year's, what was he going to want? Yeah. Like when we thought things were going to kick off. Maybe some of the disappointment with that was just from our own expectations going in.
Right.
But I would say that our, like you said, Chandler, our fan theories, our theory crafting outside was a lot more of what we were doing, spending our time inside of the park trying to confirm rather than figuring out the story that there was, because we had already gotten as much as we felt we could after digging and digging and digging.
And part of that too as well is the reason why we started theory crafting so much and trying to get into this is that when we started realizing that we can't pull on these main storyline quests, we started trying to go do those side quests. But then even when I got to those, other than like two or three of them that happened throughout the whole course of Aurora, it felt like a recycled quest to me. It was like, hey, collect three things, go drop it off. And there wasn't really much story behind that. There was. It was to help make like the dwarves feel welcome and the Aurorans feel welcome. So we made them a Christmas ornament. And then we made ornaments to decorate the tree in Evermore Town Square, which was really fun and kind of a nice part to be a part of, because we felt as if we were, you know, making something that was a little more permanent here in the park, leaving a mark.
Yeah, the actual side quests and how small they were wasn't the problem. It was the fact that each time we went, we got the same quest, go grab these items, with just another story or another skin laid over it, right? Laid over the exact same quest, and that's what we mean by recycled.
I think one of the reasons we encountered that as well was because in Evermore's attempt to do good by the park goers, they started implementing scavenger hunts, mm-hmm. a lot for newcomers to interact with the park on a quick level. They could come in, see what they needed to do, get a good feel for what they're supposed to do at Evermore, how they can talk to people at Evermore. But because of that, there was almost a scavenger hunt type feel to the quests we were doing, as if it was just, you've come here to Evermore to check off some boxes and then go home. When it was like, no. We came here to Evermore to feel at home. We came here to Evermore to make a home here with these characters, to get to know them, to make a home here for the Aurorans. But it was just checking boxes a lot of the time.
And I actually really liked those scavenger hunts.
They were nice.
Yeah. They were nice and they were fun, and they provided a good jumping off point because they made you go to certain people and ask certain questions
mm-hmm.
that I think Evermore wanted you to dig more into to get some more of the story, and that was really great. However, I think some people kind of just misconstrued that as just, oh, this is the Evermore experience, is check off this checklist and then go home, rather than being, hey, this is a starting point for questions that you can ask. So if you ever go to Evermore True. And they have the checklist, this is just a starting point. That's basically it's just your baseline questions that you should start asking to get to know things and then dig deeper.
Yeah, definitely not all that Evermore has to offer. And like you said, Skylar, just the starting off point, kind of that remedying the how to Evermore question that we kind of all need right? This is a new park. There's a new design, new ideas. So we definitely need that education there. Unfortunately, with that, though, came just the thought process that, oh, this is what Evermore is then. I get a paper from a person, I go to these things, I check off the box, and then I leave.
The one part that made this really evident for me is we were talking to one of the characters, and literally mid-sentence, another World Walker, another person that was just a guest that attended the park, literally walked up mid-sentence as we're talking, cut us off, and then looked at the character and was like, are you the baker? No. Are you the dragon trainers? No. Are you the tavern owner? And they just literally went down the list. And it was, I was just like, what is this? What is this? What has happened? Don't destroy this.
That happened multiple times. Once with one of the characters, and then another time with the dragon trainers, where we were talking to them quite in depth about dragons. And then they came up and a World Walker interrupted and said, tell me a fun fact about dragons. And then got the fact and immediately left. There was no... And I understand there may be some people that like that, right? That is what they're looking for at Evermore. I'm not saying that's wrong, but there's so much more. And I think this mechanic, this thing, the scavenger hunt, kind of led to that being the way that most people perceived it if it was their first time there at Evermore.
And maybe just a simple way to resolve that is just putting on there is like, hey, these are good beginning questions.
Right.
Or at the very end, now that you've discussed all these things, that's just the beginning. Find out more.
Right.
Like, I don't know, something like that. It was just, it did create a mentality for some guests, I think, that it was just this checklist. They wouldn't introduce themselves. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't converse with the characters. It was just kind of deliberate yes or no questions. And that tended to lead to some more of that. There was good questions on there that people could extrapolate on.
But. I would say that my quick solution to that would be cut down on some of the check boxes that were there, because there were a lot of things that people can go do in the park.
Yeah.
I would say cut those down and then find ways to turn those things that you cut out into meaningful quests or side quests to get from characters. Now that you've introduced yourself to the executioner,
of course he talks about the executioner.
Because man, he's the best. For me, he is the face of Evermore. Once they meet the executioner, have the executioner give them something shady to go find out about Tinker or about some of another character that can lead them down a hidden path of check boxes that they can be checking off without having to feel like, oh, I'm just doing a scavenger hunt. But now they are playing the game. Now they're experiencing Evermore. Right. Now they're learning to talk to these characters and see them as more than just a piece of information, but living people who have ideas and objectives and things to do.
And we experienced some of these quests, and they're actually kind of what made the whole Aurora experience for me, were some of these side-off quests, these little one-off quests that were not necessarily important to the overall story, at least that we found, but were really fun for us. As you were saying, Dan, there was actually a time, it was actually the very opening night of Aurora, we talked to Sephtis, and Sephtis made us be his enforcers to go get some money from people that owed him money, Tinker.
Specifically Tinker, which is why I brought him up there earlier. Yeah. Just because he apparently owed some gambling debts that he wasn't staying true to, and Sephtis had us let him know that if he enjoyed his head being where it was, that he would pay up.
And that was a really good story side quest for me, because maybe the scavenger hunt just says, go talk to Sephtis, he'll have a quest for you to do, or a task for you that you can assist with. That feels more of like digging into it while not feeling as if it's recycled, because you could do that with every single character. They could have their own individual kind of story.
And I really enjoyed that the idea that already, basically that opening night, we had Sephtis talking to Tinker, somebody from Evermore, somebody from Aurora. It was awesome to already see that thing, those interactions going on, relationships being built, even if they were built on gambling debts.
And I don't even know if that Enforcer's quest was supposed to be a quest, but rather it was this amazing moment that we've had throughout Evermore, I mean, oh my goodness, the actors of Evermore are everything to me. That is why I keep going back. Sure, mm-hmm. Evermore, the town is pretty looking. I love that they have authentic pieces. I love the different food. But every time I go back, it's the actors who make it so special. And I just want to do a quick shout out to them. Thank you so much for everything that you do for us, the annoying world walkers that bother you and pester you with question after question. Because you are Evermore to me, and I think for a lot of people.
I can agree with that. I love the characters so much. I think my personal favorite character from Aurora would be the male, the myth, the legend, Sir Philip Humphrey.
You connected so well with him. Please continue.
He was my favorite guy to just talk to and to see how he was doing, and I would annoy him. I loved what he did. You could write letters to anyone in the park, and he was a great facilitator of that. He worked so diligently. I would give him kind of like 11 like letters that I had handwritten on parchment with wax seals to send almost every time I went, and he would immediately go and seek out the characters and the people within the town to give them to him. And it made it a really fun experience because I could just talk to him and he would let me know, oh, hey, they really liked your letters.
And I loved that aspect, and I loved the introduction of that character because realistically, it gave the fans of the park an avenue to congratulate and thank the actors. Like a tangible way to be like, hey, I want to give you a note card, but it's weird because you're in character. Oh, let's make a canon reason why a mailman would exist and have that access. Or, and I loved that.
Or even not even just the actors, but the characters themselves.
Yeah.
Right? I could not only write a note to the actor that portrayed that, but also the character, and make memories that way. There was a moment in which I had to write, for a quest reason, I don't exactly remember, but I had to send a note to one of the goblins, Forge, and sign it by my goblin name that they've kind of bestowed on me. And I literally wrote, I hope that we can continue being friends, and I put the goblin name that they know me by, which is something unique that I've never heard anyone else having, which I think is really cool, but also it let me even perpetuate this friendship, this relationship with these characters, maybe when the actor's not even there, right? Because they do cycle through actors and
they gotta have days off.
Right, they have days off, they have lives, we get it, but it let me perpetuate that when that character wasn't there.
And one more thing of this awesome world building that we were able to see through the characters, that Evermore is a living place. Skylar and I think it was the opening night, yet again, opening night adventures, we kept hearing about this new fella named Edgar who is in town. He was teaching people how to read and write. He was a professor of mythology. Very interesting character. And so we decided that we want to get to meet him. We didn't get the chance to until we saw a new face sitting by the fire as basically we were leaving the park. And we got to sit down and quickly talk with this new character, Edgar. And we learned some about his motivations, his desires, and his end goal was to develop a school for Evermore. And he wasn't sure what he wanted to name it. He wasn't positive about what he wanted to do to go forwards, but we invested some of the gold coin, the gold and the coins that we had collected over the start of that evening. And 2 months later, we come back to him after having spoken every now and again, dropping in some name ideas for the school, as we were early investors, so of course we have these privileges. We find out that he finalized the idea, and he went with the name Skylar came up with, which was simply and elegantly enough, the Evermore Academy for Higher Learning.
Yeah, and I actually sent that to him in a letter.
That's right.
Because I only saw him 3 times during like all of Aurora, or I felt as if I was doing something else and I just didn't have enough time to get back around mm-hmm. to discuss how that was going. And so I just quickly wrote a letter while I was outside of the park and then gave it to Sir Philip Humphrey when I went in and sent it to Edgar. So we could still kind of build a relationship and have things progress mm-hmm. without actually having to spend a whole lot of time in park. And it was really cool finale night when he was like, yeah, no one else has really offered a name suggestion, so we'll go with that. And I like mm-hmm. that one. I'm like, yes. Woo!
And it was awesome to hear him say, yes, somebody wrote in a letter and they had this great name. And it was like, Skyler, that was your letter. That's yeah. so cool.
And because I liked to make it new, unique, I was like, did it have a blue seal with an S on it?
Was that yes, the one? That's the one.
So all of you characters or actors out there, if you ever got one of Skyler's letter, thank you for reading it. And thank you for taking the time. And thank you for letting him bother you.
And if you didn't, please take his name to Sephtis. And let him know that you do want him taken out. But
I try to write everyone.
Absolutely.
But yeah. just as the nature, there's so many characters and so many people in the park. I don't necessarily mm-hmm. always have time to get to yeah. know everyone.
And it's possible not every character or every actor received the letter in character. But I think you were pretty diligent in getting letters to just about everyone.
There's definitely some that I wanted to get to that I wasn't able to, and so...
Come Mythos,
I'm gonna attempt to get everyone, but that's a lot.
I'm so hoping that Sir Philip Humphrey is still there.
I would be over the moon.
Yeah, and someone else that we actually bonded with really well also, we caught her a little bit during lore, during that time we knew her as the Lorist, but then when Aurora came around, we really started getting to know this historian, Gudrun, right? We've mentioned a little bit of how we had that boiler hat. What was it? Top
the,
hat?
The bowler hat.
The bowler hat and the top hat.
That was with her, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we...
Her and Eleanor.
So we had a little mm-hmm. bit of that, but we really connected with her more because of the absence of some of the Aurora story. We started having other ideas and thoughts of how Evermore actually came to be and what was this managing, who was in charge here. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys had that conversation with her. Please
yeah.
tell us, like, what happened?
A lot of what it was just we sat down with her and just kind of had a candid conversation. Like, hey, Gudrun, we just have a laundry list of questions to ask you. Got some time? She did. So we asked her about sort of the origins of Evermore, how that came to be, the governmental system of Evermore. What did they do? Was it a... Did they have a governor? Was somebody around? Was there a leader? Why was Sephtis able to just execute kind of on his own orders, so it seemed? And we got some good answers from her about how Evermore was kind of led at that point in time by a town council, especially since Wickham's disappearance. He was sort of a figurehead pseudo-leader, but we were able to get, I would say, most of our questions answered, or at least a start to some things where we were then able to go ask other characters about their involvement in the town, their involvement in what makes Evermore Evermore. And also while we were there, we were speaking to her about some of our fan theories that we had developed, that we were noticing possible parallels in the portal's disappearance and reemergence in Norse mythology and like other little fun things that we were able to chat with her about.
Yeah, I ended up getting real stuck on Jormungandr, the world serpent, as like a connection of the portals. And it turned out to be nothing, but for some reason I was just like, okay, something happened when the portals closed that had to do with a creature. So I went around asking about all the creatures that have to deal with portals, because dragons seem to draw energy from portals. That's how Aelin was born, as a salamander next to a portal. And so I was like, okay, is there a creature that perhaps has influence over portals? I have no idea. I started thinking about other mythology that has kind of had similar things, and Jormungandr was one of them. So we would chat with Gudrun trying to bring or discuss that a little bit, and we're like, hey, is this a thing? Do you know about this? And she'd be like, like, I know about the mythology of that creature, but I don't necessarily know if it connects to Evermore. Mm-hmm. So,
we were just very curious about that whole thing.
Trying to get some world building and some mm-hmm. like deep diving into the foundation of Evermore's history.
Next big thing for me is going to be figuring out what the deal is with gods and like,
yeah,
like their like deity system. Is there a pantheon of deities? Because we've heard little names trickled about here and there of godlike beings, sort of not, I would say like along the lines of Zeus and Odin and those types of characters, sort of primal force gods, as it were. So I'm interested in seeing if there's some more to be dug out of that. That's just personally for me. That's next point of order. So, Gudrun, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. Prepare.
Well, it was funny because shortly after asking Gudrun all these questions about the law-keeping system of Evermore, the government, the authority figures that were present, there seems to be a reaction to that. It seems as though other people were asking similar questions, and actually I think a character was brought into the park who had authority. I'm not sure who it was, though.
Yes, Ozymandias, a man of the Queen, Queen Victoria, and a sort of police officer type figure. Speaking with him, he had like 20 years experience or something with Scotland Yard. Very decorated.
Constable?
Constable, yes. Yes, a constable.
A constable that has a very strict thing against loitering. He's got a real big deal on that.
And he actually doesn't believe in magic, even though magic is all around him. So that is so interesting. And I loved that little character trait there.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. As I said before, honestly, 100%, the actors and the characters that they bring to life, for me, is why I keep going back, right? We talked a little bit about our disappointment in the story and the fact that there really wasn't much to go on. The characters and actors are honestly why I keep going back. And so thank you so much for, again, thank you for doing everything you do and for being the shining light that, for me, was Aurora.
Every single actor is always a delight to get to know and to interact with.
Speaking of shining lights, let's talk a little bit about some of the ambiance, the things that were put on in the park to give some of, I don't know, the underlying tone of Aurora.
Maybe the shining light, the thing that stood out most to me was the ornament, was the huge light strands that went up and was in the shape of an ornament. So it was like pink and red going all the way up. And then at the top was like a little green or gold frill that you would maybe hang on a tree. But you could walk into this ornament and take pictures inside of it. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and we actually have that on our Instagram account. Check that out. At World Talkers right there.
And again, that Instagram plug, like you could take a picture and I saw it all over people's social media. Like friends that I knew who went, that was the thing to take it at. Was like, oh, you got to get a picture in front of the ornament. Got to get a picture in front of the ornament. Yeah. In fact, there was like a funny, there's a funny video that Evermore came out with Lonnie and Turbo like spinning in the ornament. Like, ah!
Wonderful video, thank you.
It was a really good time.
I always love those two to see them in the social media campaigns.
And along the lines of the ornament, you really couldn't walk two steps in the park without seeing some spectacular lights throughout the entire place. With it being a sort of holiday season, it really fit the vibe. They had lots of extremely colorful lights, a lot of white bright lights, some this really quite extravagant white stag that they had there. Yeah, it was. I would say if you wanted to go to Evermore and you felt like you had just a good time walking around talking with some of the characters, if you didn't get the chance to see some of those things and just kind of appreciate them, taking a walk around the park, it was just a beautiful thing to behold in and of itself.
And I think that was in direct response to the feedback that a lot of people were giving during lore, like, hey, listen, it is hecka dark, and we can't see nothing. And that was such a contrast to Aurora, where it was the same season, same darkness came that kind of time at night, but they did a really good job of bringing in a lot of lights, making it very bright, you could see everybody.
Some of them I didn't really understand, like there was the martini glass, girl, the Eiffel Tower Christmas light display.
I have issues with the Eiffel Tower, I didn't think it fit, it was just too weird for me.
It was like, oh, here's this fantasy town, but they also know about the Eiffel Tower, and there wasn't, it just didn't feel like it was congruent.
Yeah.
It was out of place, and it was a lovely, simple light design, but not for Evermore.
I can agree with that, I think. For me, the lights that I particularly enjoyed felt as if it was the magic touching in from Aurora. So the trees, like, they had, like, sugar plum white trees that glowed, and roses and flowers that glowed from the inside. And in my mind, I just equated that with the magic of Evermore, or, like, these floating, glowing jellyfish. I'm like, this is the influence of Aurora is having on Evermore Town. Mm-hmm. And the Eiffel Tower didn't really fit that.
Yeah.
It was a lot less mystical and a little more just kind of, I don't know.
Perhaps the Eiffel Tower that was there was just an early model gifted by the Aurorans, the Aurorans to Evermore. And then later, who knows, perhaps somewhere else in time, the Aurorans have dropped off the idea of the Eiffel Tower to a French person.
It's possible.
But the pyramids.
Seems a bit of a stretch, but
it is well beyond me.
it was lovely to look at everything. Maybe didn't feel it at home in Evermore there. But what did fit the theme was the new costuming that we saw. With the unveiling of Jacul and the other Aurorans, I mean, this character who previously was in drab and dirty clothes as Badger the Gravedigger, he suddenly was unveiled as this magical, mystical being of being Jacul. Mm-hmm. He was in this lovely, wonderful costuming that really portrayed him as a person from this wintry, cold, mystical world.
And as Wyatt said during our last episode, we had Nisno. Nisno was very much Elsa Ice Queen looking, or, you know, Narnia Witch Queen looking.
Right.
Very fantastical, with icicles and eyelashes that were looked like they were snow covered and
on fleek, as the kids might say.
I don't know what that one means, but yes.
So the costuming was rather stunning. And there was additional prosthetic characters such as Humboog. He was a goat, fawn, satyr. We don't really know. He said he was a goat.
He himself didn't really know at the later ends. He was like, oh, I think I'm similar to a fawn, but goat-like. I don't know.
Yeah. And with the changes that were going on, like you said, we saw changes with some characters that we already know. A change that I saw that I rather enjoyed, of course, I'm bringing him up again, Sephthys. Get ready for it. I can't stop talking about it. It's ruining my relationships. There were some fun things that they chose to do with him. His usual executioner cowl. He then had a fun red little top hat that he was wearing that he had pokes a hole through the top so the little sticky-uppy bit of his executioner cowl could still pop through there. It was just ever so fun to see. And also over the course of the Aurora season, as Sephthys was becoming a little more popular and people were willing to wager more with him and exchange their own goods, his costume began changing as he was starting to wear the gifts and acquisitions he was making from all of the world walkers.
And I'm so glad he did. That was wonderful. We would give him, I don't know, a ring or two there, and the next time we showed up a week later, he was wearing it, and it was so great.
Yeah, at the Unicorn Festival even, he was still just wearing, like, mountains of trinkets and necklaces that he had just acquired and amassed from all of the world walkers.
Definitely.
So it was in terms of the costuming, I would say a massive success.
Mm-hmm.
The characters were iconic.
Absolutely.
In their appearance, in their what, like, you saw them and you knew exactly who they were, what they stood for. It was awesome.
I mean, special shout out to the Aurorans. I felt like they really made an impact on me, especially King Eirik and Queen
Lila.
It was definitely the idea of Father Christmas. Like, I definitely got that vibe from both of them. They had nice regal kind of robes, it was, or they felt like robes. They were just really powerful cloaks. They bestowed upon them the power, the vestige that, of course, authority would come with. So I was just like, I love the Aurorans. I loved it all. The costumes were just great.
As well, there was music piped throughout the park. This was a very welcome addition that was added in, because no matter where you went in the park, there was music there that was giving you that adventuring feeling. I know it's not realism to have music playing around you as you go on your adventure, but it's really adds to the ambiance and the air of adventure.
And I would say that the music in and of itself wasn't so loud that it was going to undercut any conversations. It was, I would almost say it had a parlor music style effect where it just kind of played into the background under the undertones of the things you were talking about with other people. It suffused the, especially the entryway where it was most pervasive with this sense of magic. You were walking into a new place. You were walking into Aurora. Like, it was really, I loved it. I loved it. One last awesome thing that we were able to experience and see during the time of the Aurora season were some of the special effects that they tried to pull out. I believe it was during the night where they were trying to cause the dragon egg to hatch.
Yeah.
They pulled out some pretty spectacular effects. I think, Skylar, you were there to see that.
Yeah, I was standing pretty close. I was right on the step as the whole dragon hatching shindig finale tableau was going down, and it was pretty fun and really, really intense, because you felt the desire from all of the dragon trainers, despite all of their differences and opinions on how to make this happen. Regardless, they just wanted the dragon eggs to hatch. And so as they were doing this ceremony and making things happen, they accessed some magic, and the egg, like, lit on fire. It went up in, mm-hmm. in flames with some really cool magic and lighting effects. And I've always appreciated their special effects that they've had in Evermore. And this one was a really well-represented one. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the stories and the actors and the characters and kind of the adventures that we went on and the stuff we have going on there. There was something that we'd like to highlight and talk about as well during this review, is that they had quite a bit of activities to do there in Aurora. They had gotten rid of the axe throwing and the archery range, which we were sad to see go, but in its place came the ice skating rink, and it was pretty fun. You could buy a ticket beforehand or while at the park. And then we also had the ciphers for those that didn't necessarily want to interact with people. You could go and try to crack these ciphers and solve the mysteries. As always, there's the animal and reptile show, the music with Lonnie and Turno, the dwarves and the burrows. There was a new collectible that you could find, the sentry card, and also collectible postcards from our man, the male, the myth, the legend, Sir Philip Humphrey, Postmaster General.
I swear his title keeps getting longer and longer.
I appreciated the list of activities that Evermore tried to dish out. It felt like they were flexing a little bit, trying to develop and change and become a little bit more unique and a little more expansive in the things that they could offer other than just questing and talking.
Definitely.
So I saw that in the ciphers. I saw that in the ice skating. They definitely had more activities to do other than just talking.
Yeah, like the animal and reptile show actually became like a formal thing instead of just kind of getting together to look, maybe, I don't remember what it was originally, time period, but it felt a lot shorter. And then during Aurora, it kind of became this full-fledged thing where they would gather people at a certain time and go for, I believe, a full hour.
I'd say just about, and those shows were happening almost every hour mm-hmm. on the hour.
Yeah.
And if, for whatever reason, while you were in the park, you got a little hungy-hungy, or you wanted to get some sweets while you were there, in terms of flexing some muscle, I would say that Chef Kenny Radakovich and Tanya Michelle did a great job of bringing new flavors, new ideas to the menu. Lots of great new things. I would say that just about every time I went, I had something new, and it was something that was very, very yummy. I would say that one of the things that I will probably always remember about Aurora was just trying out the new things that were coming out in terms of the food. It was very fun.
They almost became kind of collectible within themselves.
In their own way, yeah.
Yeah, like the cupcakes would sell out so fast. Like, if you didn't immediately get in, go buy a cupcake, you're not getting one.
Right, and those things were delicious. The magic bark, loved it. Evermore cocoa, right here in Utah, the winter this season here is absolutely freezing. And so they would have these warm drinks, which were a delight. And they made them unique from anything else that I had tasted up until this point.
They were very, very yummy.
Other than food, they had merch. They were finally selling tangible, literal items other than just shirts. In Laura, it was just like shirts. But now they're selling books and pouches and things that you could kind of accent your cosplay with.
And those accents of cosplay didn't come up until the very end, which we were disappointed about.
True.
You know, for me, I'm not a huge collector of things. I was always raised to be frugal when it came to going to parks. I'm okay with buying food and whatnot, but when it comes to merchandise, I struggle with that. So I may not purchase something just for the sake of having it, but I will purchase something because I love Evermore, right? I wanted more things because I loved Evermore. When the journals were first released, they weren't stamped with the Evermore crest, which we're disappointed of. They did remedy that, but I'm not just going to buy a rather expensive item just because it looks cool. I want it to be an Evermore item.
I really like collectibles in the sense of it's showing off and expressing a place that you've been to. So anything that I buy from Evermore, I want it to say Evermore on
Agreed.
It. Or have
that's
the Evermore crest so that when someone looks at it, they're, oh, that's really cool. What is that? And I'm like, oh, you don't know? It's about this super cool place called Evermore, and these are the adventures and quests that I went on, and these are the items I bought to remember. And it, like the pouches or the notebooks that you mentioned, Wyatt, I take those with me and use them when I'm in the park, so they're very utility. And I am absolutely, as you guys all know, I am a merch person.
What?
Are you a merch person?
Wait, you're a collector? What?
I like collectibles. I'm not particularly interested in t-shirts, but I mean, I do enjoy t-shirts, but I'm not going to buy every single t-shirt.
He's wearing one right now.
That's a lie.
I hope we all are.
But the things that I really do like and the things that I bought a dragon egg. I bought a pocket watch. I have an Evermore Aurora pin, an Evermore Aurora coin, an Evermore shield keychain. And then they also had additional stuff that I just didn't have money to buy. They had steampunk goggles. They had top hats. They had a significant amount of merchandise to buy and to collect. And I really enjoyed that. I was sad that it was mainly just on finale night, though.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to repeat that on last. It was so hurtful for me and so sad for me because you came home from finale night and you had a dragon egg. And I was like, that is the most legit thing I've ever seen in my life. I was there and it was not for sale. And I was so heartbroken. And I was like, if you had this merch, why didn't you release it earlier? I would have loved to purchase it. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be alone in that. And there was some beautiful merch. Sadly, it was only saved for one night. And it was a real bummer. Super bummer.
Again, we just can't get enough stuff to buy.
Right.
We love it. And I'm sure they're hard to manufacture.
Right. But to Evermore's credit, though, something that they did really well was immersing the merchandise tents into the village, the town, right? As we have spoken about, they have currency there. It's kind of gone away from the coins and more so towards just the gold and silver nuggets. And as a result, you can actually trade in 10 silver or 10 gold to the merchandise tent and get 10% off your purchase, which is a wonderful idea. A great thing to bring those two things together and use what I'm doing actually in the park to help me further my love of Evermore.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that as well because, as we know, there's not like any certain definitive things that you can spend gold or silver on. And I really loved that because I'm like, okay, here's the one thing that everyone can spend gold and silver on is to get a discount at the merch tent
right.
to buy more interesting and fun things there at Evermore. And so that for me was a really good way of meshing the business side and the immersion and fantasy
exactly.
side.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And additionally with that, they had some other merch, like you had gift cards that you can buy online at their website and help give to people.
But they've got the gift cards that you can get online digitally. And then they also just recently,
yeah.
shortly after Aurora has ended, they've thrown up a new tab that's kind of interesting. It looks like Evermore is going to start doing custom armor building that you can purchase. It looks like the cheapest quoting that they've sort of shown is about $1,000. if you're rolling in some fat cash, go ahead and check that out. My guess is that if you're looking for more than what they're offering for the basic, and we don't know what that is yet, we haven't inquired because we just are poor and we're afraid that we'll spend all the money we have on that. But if I would say you're probably going to be spending upwards of that if you're looking to get a extremely incredible polished item along with the additional stuff that they're going to be offering with it.
Now during Evermore, we also saw not only the expansion of some new merch, but also of the park itself. What did we see during Aurora that wasn't there previously?
Paved roads! That was probably, in my mind, the biggest significant change. It changed the whole feel of the park. Mm. It cleaned it up so much.
Yeah, that was a huge step in the right direction.
Rather than a step in the mud, like it was. kind of on our opening night there, we were walking around. It was a little bit muddy, a little muggy. But the next time we were in, the paved roads were done and ready. It was a rapid turnaround, and I was surprised by how much of an impact that made on my experience. So great work on paving those roads Evermore. One more thing that we noticed that was brought about during the season of Aurora that really helped emphasize some of the cool new changes that were in the park was the development of a whole new building called Drakenhaven.
This one was released at the very end of Aurora, so we only had access to it one night, but it was amazing inside. I believe Giardani told us that it was an old hunting lodge for the Viking or for the people up there, but amazing sculptures of dragons and really came and helped usher in the dragon summer feel that is Mythos coming soon.
Those dragon head busts that you can check out on Evermore's Instagram at Evermore Park are huge. Or Evermore
Creative Studio.
That's the one, I believe. They're huge and giant. And seeing when I walked into that building, I was seriously intimidated by and impressed at how awesome that was. And walking up to Drakenhaven, you were walking through super tall grass or wheat. I don't know. Again, I'm not a plant person, but it was rather immersive. And then they had giant dragon eggs and wheelbarrows and smaller dragon eggs. And I was just like, ooh, yes.
Yeah, a wonderful new addition that was at the very end, like I said, of Aurora.
So the paved roads were great. The buildings remained awesome. The new building, Drakenhaven, was fantastic. Something else that is just a reality of the park and park-going experiences were like ticket pricing, things that we saw there. That was an improvement from lore, was that the ticket pricing was cheaper, quite a bit cheaper, in fact. If you wanted additional activities, like sort of purchasing like a lump sum with the ticket and ice skating, that was a little more expensive, like $6 more or so. But it was reasonable, I would say, for a good Evermore experience plus ice skating.
And then they ended up coming out with, at the end of the season, with that ice skating. It actually just became bundled as a part of the same ticket price. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to pay extra for ice skating. It was just included. So they did a really nice discount there, as well as having some other discounts, such as before when they announced the when Aurora was going to open, they also did early bird ticket discount prices. So we were getting tickets for like $15.
Yeah.
And buying a couple of them for the upcoming weeks. Right. It was pretty cost effective and a pretty good step in the direction of what I still ultimately want, which is a season pass.
the coveted Evermore season pass.
Yeah, I just want to feel like an elitist. With, you know, just got that, just like, show it, yep, here you go, look, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, like, hey.
I think you're thinking Wayne's World.
Oh, Wayne's World, that's what it was.
Wayne's World when you have the backstage passes to Alice Cooper.
Here you go.
and not even that, but just, I mean, and even more so than that, just making it so that we can go for a reasonably priced time, you know, we are college students, and to be honest, we don't have that much money, but yeah, we will shovel out some money for that season pass. Please give it to us.
Yeah, and then I can spend more money on merch.
Right.
Let us give you our money. Please. So I guess with that, it's time to look into more of just our overall general summary of the Aurora season.
Yeah, we talked about the quests, the food and merch, themes, and kind of the actors. So now, what do you guys think overall? Let's sum it all up. What do you guys think?
Let's start off, I think, with kind of the criticisms or things that we think need some improvement.
All right. So like I've already mentioned, and this one was huge for me, is that every time we went to ask questions or to pull on some different threads there with the characters, it really, the story of Aurora was lacking. And not just lacking, it felt like it was there, but for some reason nobody could ever even talk about it. As a guest, I mean, it felt like they couldn't talk about things or didn't want to share things, even though we were asking the right questions. The story wasn't there.
Some other things that we felt that could have been improved on. Like we said, we wish that some of the more elaborate, interesting merch would have been available earlier on. And on that same note, it seemed like everyone was trying to figure out the best way to sell their merch. And one of the things they did was, as a quest reward, they started offering the 10% gift cards to the merchandising tents. And that just felt odd and off and sort of immersion breaking, as King Irik is supposed to be giving me silver, not a discount to buy a shirt. It felt a little odd.
Yeah, that was probably my biggest immersion breaking moment, and I kind of got a little sad and depressed that night. And I understand, you want to drive sales. You want to drive sales, and that's why I really liked the silver and gold discount. Because it's a good incentive and not immersion breaking. But when I got handed that discount card, I cringed.
Yeah.
I cringed. I felt really sad. I was just like, I worked super hard for you to give me a card and say, go spend money.
Right.
It hurt a little bit, but I still really enjoyed the interactions and the quests that I went on.
For me, it was the direction that Evermore took with Aurora being more activity-oriented rather than story-oriented, which is a good thing. You know, they're flexing. They're trying new things, trying to get wider audiences. And yes, 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 we want more people at Evermore. We want this place to succeed.
So I could say for us, it's a criticism because we specifically are looking for story. Perhaps for others, it may not be as much of a criticism that they had more activities.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the thing that I could say is, like, you had a great story and lore. You could have just added the activities instead of focusing on activities so much that the story kind of felt a little flat. You know, right. I think they could have maintained that quality. And maybe things came up and they weren't able to do that. But I wish they would have kept it that same level.
Right. Now on to some improvements that we thought Evermore Park made with the Aurora season.
As we mentioned before, up at the top, Tableau schedules were significantly improved, and it heightened my experience within the park. It allowed me to know and schedule things and when I needed to be somewhere important.
Another feature that heightened the whole feeling of the park and our involvement in it were those paved roads. We were able to find people more, avoid the muddy streets, and really it cleaned up the look of the park, which we mentioned.
Along with that, it allowed the crowds to spread out. That was also an improvement that was probably, it's one of those things where if you're doing it right, you don't notice, but if you're doing it wrong, you notice. The characters were spread out in such a way that it dispersed the crowds. There was a lot less line waiting, at least in my opinion, and I really appreciated that, and I felt that the paved roads lended to that quick travel.
Overall, something that we saw at the very end, the finale was actually pretty good. In terms of the story that was there, the finale was able to hit on a lot of the big points that we were looking to have answered. We learned that Drifa was going to be the general, that Jakul was going to go back to Aurora and be a sort of intermediary between Evermore and the Aurorans. The conflicts were resolved. The relationships between Aurora and Evermore were strong, and that was great. I guess just quick little thing of criticism that we saw with that in back again regarding the tableaus, and especially this finale event, was that it was so incredibly difficult to hear. The finale would have been stronger, in my opinion, building off of how good I already thought that it was, it would have been stronger had everyone been able to hear what was going on. But just, again, just a small, quick little criticism.
Big thing for me was food. It was drastically unique and different. There was hearty stew served in bread bowls. There was meat skewers that were flavored beautifully. There was wonderful cupcakes. I got a strawberry champagne cupcake myself, and I loved it. And there was cocoa. There was variety there. It was hard to get to it at times because there was only maybe one food place open or one line at a time. But when I got there and when I was able to beat the lines, the food was very satisfying.
Worth the wait.
It was indeed worth the wait.
And hey, at the end of it all, it's also worth the wait. Am I right? That's a little fat joke. We're having fun.
All right. So we've discussed everything. We've gone through story, theme, characters, you know, all of that.
So maybe the question that we need to ask, that we asked at the end of Lore, is, was it worth the money? Was it worth how many times you went, and would you have gone more or less? Because that's kind of what we did with Lore, if I remember right.
Yeah, for me, like I said earlier in the episode, Skylar and I went quite a bit every week that the Aurora season was open. If the story would have been there, I would have felt like going every week for me, because that's what I like, was worth it. There were some weeks when we thought it was stagnating that perhaps we didn't think we needed to go, but it was still very fun overall.
I think for me, I also really enjoyed going every week. For me, it was kind of a baseline that I wanted to do in order to put on this podcast and to experience Evermore. But because the main story wasn't there, I didn't really feel compelled to go more than that.
Yeah.
As you said, it felt like it was stagnating a little bit, as if we didn't want to go even that once a week. But ultimately, again, what got me coming back was the personal interactions with each of the characters. It drove the fun for me. It made Evermore, or it made Aurora, the exciting experience that it was.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I would say, just in addition to it, personally for me, it was difficult to give the story my all when I felt like it wasn't giving me its all. But harping back on what Skylar, you just said, it was the characters. 100% every single time, it was the character interactions that were amazing to me. It wasn't just looking at the buildings. It wasn't going on a guided tour with a scavenger hunt. It wasn't looking at the lights. It wasn't looking at the food. It was the characters that made it all worth it to me. If those other things weren't there, and it was just to the characters, I would have still enjoyed it.
I kind of had a more unique experience because I only went once. And because I was getting all of your feedback of like what you guys were currently thinking of the park every time, every week that you went. So I appreciated only going once because I felt like I knew everything from you guys, but also that I got my money's worth and I was able to see the new and wonderful things because I kind of went close to finale night. I think I would have gone again. I think I would have gone opening night, but I think I would have just done opening and just done closing, just the bookends for Aurora season for me.
Wyatt, let me ask you a question. If these things that we've kind of talked about, if a stronger story had been there, would you have wanted to go more than just twice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The thing that I kind of had some stakes in it because I was bringing in family.
Right.
I was saying to my family, hey, come to this park, with Lore in my mind, thinking, oh, this is going to be exciting. Please come. This is great. You get to interact and dive into this wonderful, deep story. So I told my family to come, and I brought my sister. And when I brought her there, I was like, I hope there's something to give her. I hope there's a story to be had here. From what my buddies are telling me, it's a little lackluster compared to last season. And so I introduced Summer, to my sister, to the characters. And for her, she fell in love with the romance stories of Iona and Jakul and Nisno and Jakul. And for her, that was it. And I was like, good. I'm glad. And I'm glad that that was there for her and that it worked out for her. But I knew that something was missing and something was off.
So for us, we felt, I think, if I may summarize for all of us, that the story was lacking, but there was other magical experiences, such as the one-on-one with the characters, that really made the Aurora season.
Yep.
However, yep. Overall, for me, Aurora felt as if their main goal for the season was to act upon listener feedback. I really felt that. And I really felt that their main goal was to be willing to experiment and try to find a good balance for what people want. And so while we may have not felt that that panned out quite as well in regards to the story, there was a lot of activities, and that did pan out really well. And the placement of characters panned out really well, and dispersing of crowds was great. And everything there did have a rather holiday Dickensian magical feel.
Right. And I saw a lot of families with children there enjoying that Wonderland feel, and that was wonderful to see. And I definitely agree that this may not have been Evermore's strongest step in the right direction, but we're super excited to see where it will go here in Mythos that is coming soon.
I am very, very, very hyped for Mythos to see the feedback that they've taken from lore,
yep.
and now the feedback that they have from Aurora, and act on both of those now. I think we're going to find the perfect balance of Mythos.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we are so excited. We're going to get into our quick little wrap-up here, but wanted to let you know that the exclusive is coming up just after this. So let us get through our quick little spiel about following us on social media and whatnot, and you'll get to hear some awesome exclusive Mythos teaser stuff.
Wonderful. So first off, we just want to say thank you so much to Evermore. And to you for listening. Please check out evermore.com and see all that they have to offer.
Follow their social media at Evermore Park and at Evermore Creative Studio. They're always doing really fun things, such as the Choose Your Own Adventure that's currently going on.
If you have any questions, thoughts, or Evermore experiences, please contact us on our social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at World Talkers, or if you'd like to email us, send us in an email at worldtalkers.podcast@gmail.com.
And then last but not least, please leave us an Apple review or Spotify review or whatever platform you're listening to. That helps us out a ton. We appreciate your feedback, your thoughts, and of course, those sweet, sweet algorithms that help us get on the top pages.
And help us spread the love of Evermore, the obsession of Evermore to yeah. everyone.
Got it.
And now, an exclusive offer just for you, World Talkers listener.
Here it comes.
What is it? You see, this weekend we went to this wonderful festival. We were talking with Lonnie. He mentioned that there may be a sister dwarf or some sister coming to Evermore during Mythos.
And I think from what he said, he and Turno are a little bit worried because she's kind of different than they are.
Dun dun dun, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
So many questions. I don't know. I want to
meet this dwarf sister, if that's who this is. I'm so excited.
During the Mythos season, we will be seeing her and you
beyond the portal.